Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, July 2, 2024. Kenyans protest across the country to demand accountability from President William Ruto.
Take action, Mr. President. Our boys and girls have no work. Do something, Mr. President.
And university staff in Rumbek took to the streets to protest over salary delays.
No salary, no work.
No salary, no work.
No salary, no work.
No salary, no work.
Our dues are down.
Our dues are down.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. We begin this broadcast by telling our listeners the video of President Kiir making rounds on social media today was recorded in 2022, when Mr. Kiir made the announcement the transition period was being extended for 24 months. The situation remains tense and unpredictable in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, and other parts of the East African nation following protests by members of the youth group popularly known as Generation Z. For VOA News, James Shimanyura has more from the Kenyan capital.
Unlike the calm protests late last week, demonstrations Tuesday turned violent when thousands of young protesters faced off in Nairobi with the police. The protesters threw rocks at police, who fired tear gas to disperse them. The protesters Tuesday were demanding that President William Ruto resign and scrap what they describe as all illegal and illegitimate offices that use taxpayer money. There were demonstrations reported in 37 counties and most major cities. The protests began last month in opposition to a huge unpopular finance bill that would have raised taxes on basic consumer goods like bread. After violent clashes last Tuesday left several people dead and a part of the parliament set on fire, Ruto said he would not sign the legislation and it would be withdrawn. Human rights groups say more than 40 protesters have been killed in what is now turning out to be a rapidly escalating crisis for Ruto's government. He has made other concessions, such as eliminating funds for an office for the First Lady. The protests have wide support in Nairobi. Johnny Chengamachira is calling on Ruto to listen to the protesters.
Government, talk with the youth, because you are living in poverty. Take action, Mr. President. Our boys and girls have no work. Do something, Mr. President.
Before protests started Tuesday morning, Kenya's chief judge, Martha Koome, appealed to police to refrain from using extreme force on the protesters.
We should not witness cases of excessive use of force that threaten the lives of peaceful and unarmed protesters. We cannot, for us judges and judicial officers, envisage anybody taking law into their own hands and taking away a life. Perpetrators must be charged and prosecuted in accordance with the law.
In addition to demanding that Ruto resign, the protesters demand that salaries and allowances for members of parliament be cut. Ruto has said that it is not within his power. This woman, who didn't give her name, backs the demonstrators.
They want their rights in finance bill. They should continue. We have suffered enough. Ruto must go.
Rights groups say more than 300 protesters have been injured and hundreds more arrested. For VOA Africa, I'm James Shimanyula in Nairobi.
From Nairobi, we move to Rumbek, where the teaching staff of South Sudan's Rumbek University of Science and Technology protested this afternoon after going for 8 months without pay. Staff members say they have waited patiently to allow the government to make a decision regarding payments. For VOA News, William Sande Mabor reports from Rumbek.
No salary, no work.
No salary, no work.
No salary, no work.
No salary, no work.
Our tools are down.
Our tools are down.
Our tools are down.
The academic workers at Rumbek University of Science and Technology protested on the streets in Rumbek on Tuesday. Kurt Manyuan, the head of academic affairs at the university, says they are fed up after coping with several months of empty promises. Manyuan says now they are demanding the government pay 8 months of overdue salaries and pay overdue medical allowances.
The Academic Staff General Assembly has determined not only to continue with the sitting in strike, but also to scale up peaceful demonstration until the following demands are met by the government. One, immediate payments of all 8 months' salary arrears starting from November 2023 to June 2024. And urgent payments of ticket allowances for 5 years, from 2019 to 2024. Payments of medical allowances from 2019 to 2024. Adjustment of salary scale for all public universities as per the current central bank exchange rates.
He says if the government does not meet their demands, the academic staff at the university will not conduct lectures in the 2024-2025 school year. In a statement to the government, a university staff member, Emmanuel Rundial Majok, made it clear that their demands for the unpaid salaries must be met promptly.
We have taken almost 8 months without receiving our salaries. We have been patient all this while. We, the academic staffs, are calling upon our government to give us our salaries. So let the government give us what is our right. It is our right as citizens, it is our right as civil servants to have our salaries. Most of our colleagues are dying every day because they don't have the money to treat themselves.
University employee Gornob Makur says he and his colleagues are struggling to live without being paid their salaries.
We have been patient, waiting for our government to pay since last year, November 2023, up to today. We have a children. We have those who have rented some houses. Now they are chased away. We have a children who are sick. They need a medical attention. There is no money to take these children to hospital and to school also.
Makur said the academic staff will stay on strike until their demands are met.
If the government is not going to implement or immediate payments of our salary, we'll be on this street every day. We'll sleep on this street, demanding our right. If government is for us, he must pay. If government is for the people, he must respect our right.
South Sudan's government has struggled to pay salaries for teachers, university staff, and civil servants for over a year. Tax revenue has fallen sharply because the war in neighboring Sudan has cut off access to international market of South Sudan oil exports. On Monday, South Sudan's undersecretary at the Ministry of Finance said the budget has closed and no payment will be made until a new budget is released. There is no word on how long that will take. Reporting from Rumbek Lagos State, this is William Sande Mabor for VOA News.
Kenya's ongoing protest against proposed tax increases and the administration of President William Ruto are organized by citizens mostly in their 20s from the so-called Generation Z group. But dissatisfaction with governments largely led by elderly politicians is by no means confined to the youth of East Africa's biggest economy. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Egypt, Kenya, Nigeria, and South Africa are four of Africa's most successful economies, built on natural resources. Yet each country is grappling with high rates of unemployment among people between the ages of 15 and 34, many of them university graduates. In an alleyway in Johannesburg city centre, 24-year-old Vusi Kudzwayo sells second-hand clothes. He has a college diploma in business administration, but cannot find a formal job.
Once you come out the university system, there are no jobs waiting for you currently, because the private sector is not absorbing you. There's nowhere in the world where most jobs are in government. The private sector needs to be the one that redeploys capital to reinvest into job creation.
Kudzwayo says many African governments have policies that channel wealth to themselves. These old dinosaur men, as he puts it, want to control employment and money instead of freeing private companies to grow and create jobs. Kudzwayo says he knows exactly how young Kenyans feel about being asked to pay high taxes.
The only people that end up getting the short end of the stick are ordinary young black people who can work close to nothing in the name of they need a job, right? But we know that they can't afford to live, they can't afford to eat, they can't afford to clothe themselves with that so-called foot in the door.
The United Nations estimates that 35% of youth with higher education are unemployed in Egypt. The numbers similar in Nigeria and Kenya. In South Africa, almost half of all young people who should be working, 5 million, cannot find jobs. In Johannesburg, development economist Laura Fisher is studying rising youth frustration across Africa.
I have no doubt in my mind that we are in a crisis, especially when we consider that the unemployment rate is not only increasing in young people, but there's also a sense of disillusionment setting in because the employment decline implies economic recession and automation replacing jobs. And I think that for the youth, this is very disheartening. There's just this sort of apathy around really increasing your education and even your desire to look for employment.
In July 2021, in South Africa, what began as a protest against the imprisonment of former President Jacob Zuma morphed into rioting in several cities. The violent spree was soon taken over by 18 to 25-year-olds, venting their anger over unemployment and poverty, and perceived lack of concern from government leaders in their 60s and 70s. Cameroonian economist Leonard Mbulenziege says many African economies are badly structured.
What happens to a lot of these youths who can't gain access to formal employment is that they get absorbed into the informal economy. And in my home country, Cameroon, 90% of employed individuals find themselves in the informal sector. So these are low-paying jobs, little security, very minimal social protection in domains such as transport. In West and East Africa, being a motorcycle rider is quite popular. Small-scale retail, telecommunications now. A lot of people get into selling mobile phones or selling mobile credits.
Anthony Mveyange, the director of the Partnership for African Social and Governance Research, says economies aren't industrializing fast enough, so job opportunities are limited.
African economies are largely agricultural. We tend to argue agriculture is the backbone of our economies. They're not diversified. Most of the sectors that you wish to see generating decent jobs are not optimal in the way that one would see the other regions in the world. Service sector is coming up now, but not to the level where we want it to be. Manufacturing sector. For those reasons, we don't see so much jobs in terms of what can absorb the youth bulge.
Fisher says the deadly violence in Kenya is a good example of what can happen if a country's young people feel ignored and mistreated. What's scary, she says, is that the conditions that inspired the unrest in Kenya and South Africa are mirrored across the continent. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a South Sudanese civil society activist is hiding from government security agents. Find out why after this break. Members of a civil society forum in South Sudan say the country's national security are hunting activists in Jonglei State Capital Bor for allegedly organizing protests against high cost of living across South Sudan. Bol Deng Bol is an activist in Jonglei State. He says several offices of civil society groups were locked in the state capital Bor this week.
The government started to go after people. Myself, I was summoned in Jonglei State Legislative Assembly and just to inquire about the protests, what they want and why they are persisting. The mayor of Bor Municipal Council was also summoned, and the commissioner for Bor County was also summoned, three of us. And it's the same question, just to know what we know about the protest. And yes.
It's a little bit strange that lawmakers will summon activists. So what were they asking you when they summoned you?
They asked me what I know about the protest, whether I took part in the protest, and what do protesters really want, and why the protests are persisting, not once. Is that as civil society, we were in solidarity with the protesters. A number of, group of women and youth, who are grieved, who are really being challenged by the situation in the country, especially the economic situation, the security aspect of it. And they felt they want to express their dissatisfaction. They also had demands that they want to present to the government in a peaceful manner. The concerns are pretty much genuine. Talking about high prices of commodities in the market that have, impacted their standards of living. This is something everybody in the country is really feeling, and anybody can sympathize with them. And so that's what we did. And so they accused me of, being behind the protests saying this is not just about the high cost of living, just as we see it, but there is something big behind it, that, that there are people who are supporting this, who have put in a lot of money, and these are politicians who want to change the government. It's some sort of rebellion and all of this and all of that. So this is what they did, and the commissioner said, threatened me, of arrest, that I was going to be arrested after the meeting because there was.
So you're telling me that after the lawmakers summoned you, the commissioner of Bor County was threatening to arrest you. Talk to me about that.
They wanted to arrest me, but of course the lawmakers intervened and said no, we will not be arrested because this is our forum that we convene. So we will not arrest him here. And then on the same day, at night, at about 9, they went to one of our colleagues called Alewa Nyat. Alewa Nyat is also he's a civil servant. He works with the government, with the Ministry of Information. And, they went to his house, and then they took him. That was CID that was with him, they also came to me. They do not know precisely where my house is located, so they tried. They stationed around my house there, and played a trick. Got somebody within the CID who knows me very well. He's sort of a friend a bit. So called me out so that we can discuss something or something like that. But I realized there was something behind. So I asked him, it is late, I will not go, and then put off my phone. So
why is it that it is only the people in Jonglei State who are protesting the high cost of living? I mean, everybody in the country is crying about prices. People are not able to put food on the table for their families, and civil servants have not been paid for months. Why is it that it is only the people of Jonglei who have stood up to speak?
Yeah, that's the question, a very interesting one. When you look at the country, South Sudan, different parts of the country, there are different things take place in different parts of the country in terms of the level of awareness. There are some people who really do not know that peaceful protest is a constitutional right within the country. There are people who know, but they fear. They do not have experience. And when you look at Jonglei State, these things are very normal. People have been protesting a number of times, 2021, 2022, civil servants, business people, boda-boda, and, students and so forth. It's a normal thing in Jonglei State.
You say these protests in Bor will continue regardless and despite these threats and arrests. I mean, how safe are activists who are still planning to come out and speak out about the issues that are affecting people? How safe are they?
For now, we do not know whether this protest will continue to take place as usual, because people are now dispersed. People are, you know, in different places, like Aleu, who is now in jail. They tried to bring him to court today. I have not got the update yet, whether he's tried or not. People are scared, you know. And the women who were leading this were also threatened and they're cold. So we still do not know whether it will or not. Yeah, we may have a mass protest anytime soon, because the circumstances will force people out. For now, politicians and those other interest groups who are trying to protect their positions, you know, by acting sometimes illegally or outside of the law, because arresting people at night, this is very illegal. It in fact, should be a criminal act. But it is being done by officials of the government, and the government is not saying anything about it, not condemning it.
That's Bol Dengbol, the executive director of Intrepid South Sudan, a Bor-based civil society group. He spoke to me from an undisclosed location earlier this evening. This program made several calls to Jonglei State Minister of Information for comments on Bol's accounts, but he did not return our calls. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, is raising its humanitarian aid appeal as increasing number of people flee conflict and hunger in Sudan are in search of safety in neighboring countries. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UNHCR says it now requires $1.5 billion, up $100 million over its January appeal, to assist 3.3 million refugees as well as the local communities hosting them. Money from the January appeal has been used to help those who have fled Sudan to five neighboring countries, the Central African Republic, Chad, Egypt, Ethiopia, and South Sudan. UNHCR Head of Global Communications, Ewan Watson, says the revised appeal includes help for two new countries, Libya and Uganda. Since the start of the war in April 2023, he says the UNHCR has registered 20,000 new arrivals in Libya from Sudan, mainly fleeing Darfur.
We understand that thousands more have arrived in Libya that are not registered and are in the east of the country. Clearly there the situation is extremely difficult for these refugees. Local services available in the country are really overstretched.
Watson says there's little shelter in the region and refugee families are forced to sleep out in the open. He says medical facilities cannot keep up with the growing needs, putting children in particular at risk of malnutrition. Watson says Uganda, which already was the largest refugee hosting country in Africa, is fast becoming home to a burgeoning Sudanese refugee population. Since the outbreak of the war, he says more than 39,000 Sudanese refugees have fled to neighboring Uganda. He says 70% have arrived just this year, triple the number who were initially expected or predicted.
Most of them are arriving from Khartoum and have a university-level education and are looking to rebuild their lives. So through this appeal, we will be working with host governments to support access to territory and to asylum systems for these Sudanese refugees fleeing the brutal war.
Watson notes the UNHCR has received only 19% of the money it needs to run its refugee humanitarian operations. He says this is abysmally insufficient to cover the most basic needs for people forced to flee. He says heavy rains expected in some of the hosting countries risk complicating the delivery of aid, particularly in border areas. He appeals to international donors to provide the funds needed to help strengthen government-led efforts. Otherwise, he warns, more and more refugees will be forced to seek help further afield in countries such as Libya, which are extremely difficult for refugees. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From Geneva, we move to Malakal, where the UN Refugee Agency agency says South Sudan has received over 500,000 refugees and returnees who have crossed into the country through the border town of Reng. Aid agencies operating in Reng say they are overwhelmed by the needs of refugees fleeing the conflict in Sudan. For VOA News, Mamer Abraham Kwart reports from Malakal.
Silva Alkebe, UN Interagency Coordinator in Reng, is calling on the international community to help Sudanese who fled the fighting at home, as well as South Sudanese who are hosting the refugees.
As much as we are receiving support, we know that the government is trying their best, the donors are trying their best, the humanitarian partners are trying their best, but comparing to the scale of this crisis, it's still we have a lot to do. So I really hope that no one will forget about Sudan and about South Sudan, because they are receiving big number. They are maintaining open door policy, so they require our support.
Alkebe says the transit center in Reng hosts about 30,000 refugees and returnees. She notes that some refugees are reluctant to move to Maban refugee camp because of security concerns.
The concept of transit centers so far proved to be successful because up to today we received more than 585,000 refugees and returnees through Jordan border. And in the last head count, which is just rough estimation, of course, we have around 13,000 in the transit center, which means the rest of the 585,000 all moved ahead to the area of origin or refugee camp.
Holia Ibrahim Hassan, a Sudanese refugee from Sudan with 7 children, says she has been at the Reng Transit Center since October last year. She says she received support only once and now sells firewood to feed her children.
They are supposed to give us relief such as sorghum. I am a woman and I have daughters. For men, they can go and hustle or do any work. But for a woman without something in her hand, for instance, if you have money as a capital, you can join the market.
50-year-old Sudanese refugee Nasaradim Hadam Abdallah says NGOs prefer offering services to returnees. VOA could not independently verify Abdallah's accounts.
They turn it to returnees, and this is because all staffs are from South Sudan, and as a result, they serve their people rather than the main objectives that they were employed to do. Up to now, we did not receive stipends or money nor food, and people are living in a dire situation. Currently, the rainy season has started, which makes it impossible to look for a job. We also don't have plastic tarpaulin for our shelter.
Abdallah says now that the rainy season has begun, it's impossible to find a job. 40-year-old Saleh Ibrahim, a father of 4 children, says he fled the conflict in Sudan and his family are struggling to survive. He says the government of South Sudan and UNHCR need to relocate refugees from Reng to a safer place.
Sudanese refuse in totality to go Maban, and those who went there have returned back, and families who are in Maban are now stranded. This is a real situation we are in currently, and from here we call upon the government of South Sudan and the organization to get for us safe and secure place for the poor Sudanese who left their home due to war.
Alkebe says services are desperately needed in refugee camps, adding that UNHCR has no capacity to run a new refugee camp in Reng. She says families willing to relocate to Maban should register. For VOA News, I am Amer Abraham Kwart, reporting from Malakal, Upper Nile State.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday, July 2nd, 2024. We now leave you with Sultan Clinton and the song Itawenu. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Jumbe Hamza, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Oh,
down.